I've had the subject of bondage and liberty on my mind for several weeks. Preached about it twice last week, and I'm still not finished with it. Last time we talked about the various or a few ways that we could be in bondage. We talked about the physical bondage, emotional bondage, digital bondage that we can find ourselves in, religious bondage that we can find ourselves in. And today I'd like to talk to you about the most famous account of bondage that's recorded in history. When people talk about bondage, their mind naturally goes to Joseph and Jacob and the Hebrew nation. Now, I want you to remember that God promised Abraham that his people would be in bondage for 400 years or 430. That's found in Genesis. So God already knew that they were going to be in bondage. He prophesied it to Abraham. Turn with me to Genesis 47 and verse 13. This is after Jacob had found that there was corn in Egypt and moved his people down there. All his other 11 sons, Joseph was already down there. And they moved all their cattle and everything down there. Now, y'all can read, so I'm not going to read everything about this account, but I do want to point out some things in this. I know you can read, but I want you to read. Amen? Now, in verse 13, "And there was no bread in all the land, for the famine was very sore, so that the land of Egypt and all the land of Canaan fainted by reason of famine. And Joseph gathered up all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan for the corn which they bought, and Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's house. And when money failed in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan, all the Egyptians came to Joseph and said, 'Give us bread, for why should we die in thy presence?' And Joseph said, 'Give your cattle, and I will give you for your cattle if money fail.' And they brought their cattle to Joseph. And Joseph gave them bread in exchange for horses and for flocks and for the cattle of herds and for the asses. And he fed them with bread for all their cattle that year. When the year was ended, they came to him the second time and said unto him, 'We will not hide it from my Lord how that our money is spent. My Lord also hath our herds of cattle. There is not aught left in the sight of my Lord but our bodies and our lands. Wherefore shall we die before thine eyes, both we and our land? Buy us and our land for bread. And we and our land will be servants unto Pharaoh. And give us seed that we may live and not die, that the land be not desolate.' And Joseph bought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh, for the Egyptians sold every man his field because the famine prevailed over them, so the land became Pharaoh's." I want you to think that preference is going to be given to the people that are citizens in your land. Aliens are not going to have the same rights as the citizens are they? Joseph's brothers were aliens in a strange, they were strangers in a strange land. Now, they sold everything, and I want you to know that these people that sold their lands, they sold their cattle, which doesn't make any sense to me to trade cattle for bread. Bread doesn't reproduce, cattle does. Meat and drink, if they would have kept their cattle. But look at the mentality of how people go into bondage. They said, you take care of us, we'll give you what we've got, and you take care of us. And so then they become at the mercy of the one who they sell themselves to. And finally, when everything else got... See, I would have done it different. I would have traded some of the cattle for some seeds first instead of for bread. Seeds make bread, don't they? You got to think. Sometimes we don't think as children of God. And that's the whole reason why they became in bondage in the first place, is because they looked for sustenance to a leader of men instead of from God Himself. Now, so they go into bondage and they serve them all in all. They were in a strange land for 430 years, as God predicted and prophesied, but they were in hard labor to Pharaoh for about 210 years. And during that time, they became so they multiplied because God blessed them in that land. God blessed them with the fruits of the womb, and their herds and everything also increased during that time. Now, but initially they sold themselves out to Pharaoh so that he would take care of them. I want us to always remember that God is our provider and our protector. Not a man. Not a government. Not a man. Y'all hear me? Now, that's the principle is laid out consistently throughout the scriptures. Y'all remember when the Jews brought Jesus and they said before Pilate, crucify him, crucify him. And then Pilate said, behold your king. Talking about Jesus. And all of the mob were there, said, we have no king but Caesar. They had forgotten that God was their king. And they were brought into some severe... They said, his blood be upon us and our children. And God called it. They called it for themselves. Y'all see how that kind of bondage can happen and continues when you don't proclaim God as your king. Now, but that's way in the future from this point. Now, they were in bondage for 210 years, but they served them and they lived in a strange land for 430. And they murmured and they cried out to God. And he saw their affliction. And he called a man named Moses. And during that time, he spent 40 years in the wilderness. And during that time, did y'all know that Moses was 80 years old when God called him to lead his people out of the land of Egypt, the land of bondmen? And They said, "Who are you to lead us out?" Instead of being spiritually perceptive that, this man is called of God. I think we need to be spiritually perceptive and listen to what the Spirit is telling us and what He's showing us. Now, God is going to prove to them who God is. He's going to prove to them, even though they'd been in that bondage for 210 years and in a strange land for 430. Now, first of all, He starts with the plagues. The plagues upon the ones that brought them under bondage. And, you know, with the lice and the frogs and the locusts and all of that. And finally, and every time Pharaoh hardened his heart, and God hardened it too. That's what the Bible says. Now, Pharaoh hardened it, and I think he hardened it because, and the way that God hardened it was because God kept on showing him who was in control, and he didn't like it. Now, through all of those plagues, God is performing miracles in the face of His people and showing them that He is superior to whatever rule that Pharaoh has. And Pharaoh can do nothing in the sight of a holy and an all-powerful God. And, you know, Pharaoh might be able to do some stuff. Do y'all remember in this when Moses goes and God tells him to cast his rod down and it became a serpent? Y'all remember that? You remember when and Pharaoh had his soothsayers and seers to throw their rods down and they became serpents too? Y'all, this is amazing stuff. But you know what happened? Moses' rod, the serpent that it became, ate up all the other serpents of the soothsayers and seers of Pharaoh. Once again, God proving that whatever they could do, even though it might look like it was powerful, God is more powerful than whatever they could do. Now, He did this in the face of all of the children of Israel. And then finally we come and, you know, He made the river red with blood and it stank and the whole thing, the pestilences that He brought upon them. And finally He told the children of Israel, you go and you take a lamb and you slay that lamb according to your eating in your house. And you take the blood of that lamb and you put it on the post and the lintels and you gird yourself because you're going to eat it in haste because I'm going to send the angel of the Lord is going. The Lord is going to go through the city tonight and He's going to kill all the firstborn of the children of Egypt. But when He sees the blood on the doorpost, He's going to pass you over. And that was a feast that they were going to keep throughout their generations in remembrance of God's passing over them that were covered by the blood of the Lamb. Hey, if you don't see Jesus in that, you ain't looking at it right. Now, because it says Jesus Christ, our Passover, was crucified for us. Not for the Egyptians, not for people that were not His people. Now, if we go farther into this, I want to talk about this bondage and liberty. And I want you to think about the mentality of being in bonds. For 200 years, over 200 years, your family, everything that you've known has been about what it's like to be a slave. You've not enjoyed freedom. You couldn't go where you wanted to go and do what you wanted to do. You served Pharaoh. Your fathers served Pharaoh. Your grandfathers served Pharaoh. Your great grandfathers served Pharaoh. And you got to the point where you didn't like it because the taskmaster became hard and wouldn't even provide you with stubble to make bricks. He made you make the bricks. Now, their cries went up to heaven and God heard them. And he sent Moses to deliver them out of the land of bondage. And he brought them out with a mighty hand in such a way that the Egyptians laded them with gold and jewels and food and everything they needed, clothes and everything they needed, and really told them, get on out of here. Pharaoh still hardened his heart and he followed them, and God protected them by the pillar of fire by night and the pillar of the cloud by day. And when they went out, it was only 3 days before they came to the Red Sea. I believe it was 3 days. No, it was the first day. They came to the second day. They came to the Red Sea. They're back. They got the Red Sea in front of them, and they've got Pharaoh behind them. And they're murmuring to against God, and they say, and this is in Exodus 14 and 11, if you want to go there. We'll start in 10. And when Pharaoh drew nigh, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them, and they were sore afraid, and the children of Israel cried out unto the Lord. And they said, listen to this, and they said unto Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness? Wherefore hast thou dealt with us to carry us forth out of Egypt? Is not this the word that we did tell thee in Egypt, saying, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians? For it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness. Friends, I want you to understand the mentality of slavery and bondage. That's it. They got so comfortable being slaves that they had no idea how to live free. Y'all got that? And to me, it is so, I can understand that, because we can get so comfortable in our bondages that we don't realize what freedom is like. I tell you, freedom from all kinds of bondages, whether it's digital, religious, or whatever. And I want you to see how this unfolds, how that God, beyond a shadow of a doubt, proved to them time and time and time again that he could provide and did provide and protected them, and yet they still had the mindset of slavery. My friends, you think about this. They murmured against God and against Moses. Lord, you just brought us out here to die in the wilderness. And God said, stand. He told Moses to hold up the rod before the sea. And he told Moses, told the people, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord. And Moses stood in front of the sea and held up the rod of God. And the seas parted and they walked across on dry land. And then you see that that the pillar of fire was behind them, protecting them, giving them a safe passage so that Pharaoh couldn't charge after them and take not one of them captive again. They all were set free, and every one of them that were saved by the blood got across the ocean. Now, as soon as the last one got out, God caused the waters to come back on Pharaoh and his riders. See, God let him pass, didn't he? He took up that pillar of fire and they said, now's our chance. Here we go. And so they go chasing after the children of Israel, and they got in the midst of the sea, and God closed the waters back on them and killed them all. That'd be a sight to see, wouldn't it? I think if I would have been there, I would hope anyway, that I would think, man, God really means what He says. God really is protecting us and providing for us. He's delivered us out of the hand of bondmen with a mighty hand. Boy, and they got over there and Moses sang that song, and what a beautiful song it was. 3 days later, they get in the wilderness and they're in there. Now, 3 days. And they come to a place and they start murmuring against God and against Moses again, saying, you brought us out here in the wilderness to die. These waters, they came to Meribah, or Marah, I think it's Meribah. And Marah. They said, what shall we drink? You brought us out here to die of thirst. And then God showed Moses a tree, and Moses cast the tree into the water, and the waters became sweet. That's miraculous, isn't it? That's something God is showing them. I am your provider. I can give you what you need when you need it. That's one. That's two. And then 6 weeks later, they start murmuring against God and against Moses again. 6 weeks after witnessing the power of God naturally. I mean natural at things. That's amazing, isn't it? And then they come up and they say, oh, you brought us out here to die. You brought us out in the wilderness to kill. I want y'all to go back and read Exodus and Genesis and Exodus and Numbers. Leviticus is a little bit difficult, but you need to read it anyway. And then they go out and 6 weeks they say, oh, we can't stay. We're going to die of starvation out here. I guess it took them 6 weeks to eat all of their what they had been given by the Egyptians. And then they were in a famine again. They said, oh, what are we going to do? And God got angry with them. And He said, okay, I'm going to give you manna. And I'm going to give you manna in the morning. And I'm going to give you quails in the evening for your meat. And He said, and every morning the dew's going to be on the ground. And when the dew's evaporated, there's going to be something about the size of a coriander seed. I guess it's about the size of maybe a pencil eraser or something like that. And it's white like the hoarfrost on the ground. And they picked it up and He said, you take that, pick it up every man, and you make bread out of it. And they did that. And He said, when you come on the sixth day, He said, don't take up more than you can eat in one day. And some of them didn't believe God, did they? Some of them took up more than what they should have. And guess what? It bred worms and stank if they didn't consume it that day. If they tried to hoard it and take it over for the next day, it bred worms and stank. Boy, does that have anything to do with us today? Jesus said what? Give us this day our daily bread. Hoarders are in bondage to materialism. You don't have to live in a house where people, you know, where you can't even walk in there because you got so much junk. to be a hoarder. Hoarder is a mentality. It's not just an action. It is an action, but it's a mentality. Whoo! Brother Paul done gone to meddling now. All right. So God gives them the quails and He gives them the manna. And I want you to think that on the sixth day, God said, you take up twice as much today because you're not even supposed to make a fire on the Sabbath day, because the Sabbath day is a day of rest for you. He said, don't go out there and try to pick any of that manna up, because there's not going to be any. And some of them didn't believe God, and they went out there on the seventh day and there wasn't nothing. God showed them time and time and time again, listen to me, because I know what you need, and I'm serious about what I'm saying. They weren't serious about hearing it. They weren't serious about doing it. They weren't serious about believing God. Y'all understand this? God is serious about His instructions. So that's 6 weeks into it. Yeah, 6 weeks into it. He says, God said, that I may prove them. He said, go out and the people shall go out and gather a certain rate every day that I may prove them. You know, God proves us, doesn't He? That's called a trial in some places. Some places it's called a temptation. It's not tempting with evil, but it's tempering them. It's showing them, giving them a chance to prove whether they're going to believe God or not. Now, he says, I don't want to get bogged down in all. There are a lot of details in all this. And then on, they get a little bit farther. I don't know the timeline on this one, but they come to a place again and they say, Moses, you brought us out here to die. We're thirsty. What are we going to drink? Well, I tell you what. You know, they had several million people at this point. We're not talking about a group of 15. This is a group of over probably upwards of 3 to 4 million people that were delivered out of bondage. And they're all chiding with Moses. I mean, how many times is it going to take for the Lord of glory to prove to you that He sustains you and provides for you, to believe that He means what He says? They're out here in the wilderness again and say, Moses, you brought us out here to die. And then, we're thirsty, what are we going to drink? And Moses is frustrated, obviously. Can you imagine Moses' frustration at the people? And God tells Moses to smite the rock with his rod. And he did, and it flowed water, flowed out of that rock to feed not only 3 or 4 million people, but all their cattle, to give them water. That's a lot of water. And then they continue on, and after that, and 2 years into it, they come up to the Jordan River. And God has brought them now into the entrance of the land of Canaan, the land flowing with milk and honey. This is your promised land, God says. I'm paraphrasing all this, you understand. God said, this is your promised land that I promised to your fathers. And God told them, there's inhabitants of the land, but don't worry about it. I'm going to drive them out before your face. And what do they do? What do they do? They get in there and they say, all right, we need to send some spies in there. Moses. God, and Moses talked to God about it, and God said, all right, tell them to go on and send them in there. It wasn't God's idea to send spies in there. God can see everything. He knows what's in there. He already told them what's in there. It's a land flowing with milk and honey. There's inhabitants in there, but don't worry about it. And they said, okay, we just want to vet God to see if he's really telling the truth. And so they sent spies in there, and God told Moses, all right, suffer them to send them in there. So they did. One leader or representative from each of the tribes of Israel, 12 of them go in there. And among those 12 was Caleb and Joshua. And they go in there and they stay 40 days spying out the land. And they come out. Turn to Exodus. No, I'm sorry, Numbers. Turn to Numbers. Because all this account is not in Exodus. I'm just giving you a spoiler alert. If you read Exodus, you won't get the whole deal. You know, you got to read all of God's Word to get it all, right? Numbers chapter 14. I know you can read, but I'm going to read this too. Well, this is really... All right, we'll back up in 30. Chapter 13. Let's start in 25. And they returned from searching of the land after 40 days. And they went and came to Moses and to Aaron. You remember Aaron's a high priest. And to all the congregation of the children of Israel unto the wilderness of Paran to Kadesh. And brought back word unto them and unto all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. You remember how the fruit, the grapes, they brought back one cluster of grapes hanging on a stave that two men had to carry. Now, I can pick up, 15 clusters of grapes just with one hand. All right? It took two men to carry one cluster of grapes. How heavy was that? I don't know whether the cluster was just so big or whether the grapes were so big. I have no idea. But all I know is that it weighed a lot, so much that two men had to carry it. It certainly was a land flowing with milk and honey, was it not? Listen to what they said. And they told him and said, we came unto the land, these are the spies, whither thou sentest us, and surely it floweth with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great. And moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. That's the giants. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and by the coast of Jordan. And Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once. Boy, that's great faith, isn't it? Let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. We're well able to take it. But the men that went up with him said, we be not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. Y'all see what's going on here. There's a rub here. There's some friction here. There's a difference in thinking here. There's a difference in mindset here. And they brought up an evil report of the land, which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, the land, though we have... through which we have gone to search it, is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof, And all the people that we saw in it are men of a great stature. And there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which come of the giants. And we were in our own sight as grasshoppers. And so we were in their sight. How many times do we disbelieve God because of what we see with our eyes? How many, and this is lack of faith, is really what this is. This is a mistrust or a distrust in God. This is not a distrust in His presence or in His existence. This is a distrust that God will do what He said He would do. And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night, and all the children of Israel murmured. Here it is again. They murmured against Moses and against Aaron, and the whole congregation said unto them, "Would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God we had died in this wilderness. And wherefore hath the Lord brought us unto this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and our children should be a prey? Were it not better for us to return into Egypt?" You see, that's the mentality of a slave. A slave is so gripped by the ones that have brought him into bondage, he has no idea what it is to be free. Y'all see this. They got so comfortable in their slavery, they wanted to return to the slavery because they had a mistrust in God and living free. You know, I want every one of you, I'm thinking about it. I want every one of you to think about what's holding you in bonds today. What's keeping you from trusting God and His promises? And you know what God said about this? God is so specific and so serious with His judgments and what He said. He said, "You are going to wander around in this land for 40 years in the wilderness because of the spies." Every day, God is so exact with His judgments and punishments. He said, "1 year for every day that the spies spied out the land because you didn't trust me." And God said, "You are going to reap the benefit," or not benefits, but the consequences of your mistrust. Now, there's a lot of points in this, but I want us to get this one straight. Caleb and Joshua said we'd be well able to take the land, didn't they? Did God suffer Caleb and Joshua to go, "Oh, since y'all had faith in me, y'all can go on in there," while the other 10 are wandering? No. Their lack of faith affected people that had great faith. And the people that had great faith had to suffer the consequences along with those that had zero faith in God. Or at least zero exercising of their faith in God, if they had any. Did you know that your lack of faith affects other people? It does. And I really want to look at this in terms of the church. How many times has the church been at a juncture of crossing over Jordan? And there might have been some there that said, "No, we can't do it." And, like there's a schism in the mindset of the church. How many times have y'all seen churches do that? And then some people in the church might be saying, and I'm not talking about Union Church, y'all understand that, but just in general, I want us to think about this, because this principle is true. I don't care who you are or where you attend. There's going to be some that have great faith in what God promised. And there's going to be some that say there's giants in the land. We can't take it. And I'm going to tell you that every time I want you to side with what God promised and not with what man is afraid of. Now, these are things that are serious for our lives today. Our lack of faith and our faith affects other people. And so Caleb and Joshua had to wander around with them, the people that had no faith, for 40 years. Have y'all ever heard anybody say, those old heads are going to have to die before things change? You know where that comes from? That comes from this right here. You know why? Because those that had lack of faith, God said, your carcasses are going to wither away and decompose. And God had called them carcasses. He said, your carcasses are going to fall in the wilderness and you're not going in from 20 years old and upward. It certainly did take a whole generation or two to die before God allowed those to actually enter into the land that God promised. Y'all ever seen churches that have died? There's a lot of reasons why churches die. But I can tell you one of the main ones that they die is lack of love of God, first of all. And the other one is lack of faith. Lack in trust of God in being able to fulfill His promises. Whew, that's serious stuff, isn't it? The old one, and I've seen that with my eyes. I've experienced that in certain places and regions of the country, specific churches where the old ones had to die. And I'm not telling you old folks that I want you to die, because you're not in this situation right here. But I want to tell it to you before we get into this situation. Amen? It's a whole lot easier to teach something when it's not really up to you. This is so important that, and God is so exact. You know, God's exact with everything, isn't He? If you look at the freedom and the bondage, God told Adam, in the day that thou eatest thereof, thou shalt surely die. Did God mean what He said? Did He make good on what He said? In that day, He did. He told them later on, if ye be willing and obedient, ye shall eat the good of the land. And I want you to know that after all these... God tells them in Numbers later on. So for 38 years, they had to deal with this manna. I want to talk about this manna for a minute. They didn't know what to call it, because they walked out and they said, what is it? And you know what the word manna translated means? It means, what is it? So whenever they called it manna, they said, what is it? What is it? And God never intended for them to eat manna for that long. God intended for them, and we talk about manna as if, you know, holy manna, and you know, we put so much stock in manna, and we almost What we attribute that to whatever God gives us as far as blessings. And I'm telling you, that manna was a blessing to them. But sometimes I think we put manna up there so high that we are willing to stay in the wilderness when God intended better for us. God never intended for them to eat manna for 40 years. He intended for that to sustain them until He brought them to the entrance of the land of Canaan. And at that time, the manna should have ceased because they should have had faith in God and gone in and possessed the lands and see the salvation of the Lord again and again and again and again. Instead, they went on their eyes. And really, they stayed in bondage. I mean, they were free, but they were bound to their own decisions and mistrust. You go read Hebrews. You go read Acts. And you remember when they stoned Stephen? That sermon that Stephen said right before Saul of Tarsus consented to his death. And you'll find a great history lesson in when he was talking about Moses. And he was talking about the wanderings of the children of Israel. And how and David even talked about this so much. Because it's so pertinent to the history of the Israel nation. And not only them, it's pertinent to us today. Well, I tell you what's holding you back? What's keeping you in bondage? What's keeping you from living the freedom in that God promised? I want you to know that this has to go with faith in God. It has to do with that. And if your faith is in anything other than what God has promised, your faith is misdirected. It's misapplied, and that faith is going to be vain. Because if your faith is in something not sure and steadfast like God's promises, you're probably going to be disappointed and ashamed. Whew, this is big stuff, isn't it? Let's go on in and cross Jordan. Well, you know, when they finally did, after the 40 years, when they finally did come back to that place. Now, I want you to understand the geography of this situation. So we've got the plains and where they were in the wilderness. And then we've got the Jordan River. And then on the other side of Jordan, there is a mountain range. And the land of Canaan was on the other side of that mountain range. Now, when they came up to cross the Jordan River, there were two tribes, two and a half, Dan, Reuben, and the half-tribe of Manasseh. They had cattle. And this is a whole other sermon, but I got to tell this because this is serious. They had cattle. And they said, look, we're not going to go over this Jordan with you. This is 40 years later now. They said, we're not going to go over the land. Over Jordan with you, but he said, we'll fight with you because you're our brethren. We'll fight your battles with you, but we're going to stay over here because what we can see here in this plain, this land is good for cattle, and we got a lot of cattle. Y'all see a problem here? They were looking at what they could see with their own eyes. They had no idea how good the land was on the other side of the mountain. They couldn't see it with their eyes. They were still mistrusting God. And I want you to look down through the pages of history and the annals of time and see how far this people degraded when Jesus went into the land of the Gadarenes. You mean Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh? Remember that? Reuben and Gad? I said Dan, but I meant Gad. What were the Gadarenes keeping? Swine. They didn't start out keeping swine, but that's where they ended up. God never intended for his people to keep unclean animals. Y'all think about this spiritually. How we spiral downward. You remember the wild Gadarene? And God, they were keeping the swine, and God calls, I think it was 100 or whatever, the legion of devils, and God suffered them to go into the swine, and then the swine jumped off, and they begged God to depart their coast because they were afraid of him. Listen, if we don't trust God now, it has an effect for our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, our great-great-grandchildren, and all down the line. David made a very serious point about this, and he said, while it is today, suffer not your souls as in the day of provocation when they did tempt the Lord. He said, because today is the day of salvation. Today is it. And it matters for the future. Whew. This is big stuff. Look, this Bible is amazing. It is amazing. I want you to get into it. I want you to dig in it. I want you to apply it to your life. And I want you to know it. The doors of our church are open for reception of members. Should any have the desire to cross on over Jordan and believe God for what he promised and live in this land flowing with milk and honey. May God bless you is my prayer.